Life is unpredictable, but preparing for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. They offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, as we're still battling through the last bit of this cold. So bear with me. I may have to pause every now and again. You know how it goes. But we soldier on, and the Bulldogs will take on Alabama tonight. As of this recording, it is raining right now in Starkville. There is some rain in the forecast later today. But as of this morning, there has been no movement yet as far as changing the start time of the game. A lot of people are messaging and asking about that so they can make plans to be here. We certainly understand that. But as of now, no change to the current schedule. We got an incredible meteorology department here at Mississippi State. And so I trust them. And we rarely have a change in schedule. You know, we did during Super Bulldog weekend. But, you know, it is what it is. So I just shared that with you right out of the gate. I'm trying to get the show up a little bit earlier today for those of you that are planning to travel. But, huge series coming up between Mississippi State and Alabama. This Alabama team is a good team. They're an improved team. And I want to share, too, you had a chance to speak to Mark Etheridge earlier this week. And I reach out to people that I know when I need information about teams that maybe I don't watch as often, and Alabama's one of those. And Mark seems to believe, like me, that State will take the series, but he told me some things offensively about this group that's rather interesting. And so I'm going to use some of his insight as part of our preview today. And let's go ahead and get to that after we talk about our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. Longtime sponsors of this show. Man, I love Bulldog Burger Company. You do too. Chances are you already have a raving love affair with them. If not, you should. Bulldog Burger Company always, always, always satisfies me. There's so many places you go, it's just kind of hit or miss. It's such consistency at Bulldog Burger Company. And, of course, with the Eat With Us group, you expect that. That's a family of restaurants that have served the Golden Triangle so well for so many years. But Bulldog Burger Company, it's a great place for lunch. It's a great place for dinner. Whether you're going out with friends or family, maybe you want to have an adult beverage, a glass of wine. I don't know. You can do that at Bulldog Burger Company. In addition to that, too, you're going to have a great restaurant-quality hamburger that's unlike anything else you're going to find. The selections on the menu are absolutely incredible. I've had them all. I have. And I've never walked away disappointed in an experience at Bulldog Burger Company. So put your feet under their table. Let them handle everything. Get the spring rolls as your appetizer. It'll make you and everybody around you better looking. And then, you know, hey, maybe you get that BLT salad. You may like it fried. I like it grilled. Or you get the Bryant, the Lauren, the Freshman 15. If you're a newbie, and there's nothing wrong with that, I love new customers. I would start with the Bulldog. And then next time you come in, maybe get that Pimentology add bacon. That'll put some hair on your chest. It will, for sure. And get that chocolate shake to go. You'll be glad you did. Just kind of cap that experience with a good palate cleanser. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, let's take a look at Alabama. And if you're like me, it's just like, you know, I'm in the big maroon bubble, right? I'm a fan of the league, but for some reason, I've only watched, I think, Alabama play one time this year. You know, my schedule's a little different than yours. Obviously, I'm on the road a lot chasing the Diamond Dogs around, but I have not had a chance to watch them play much. I've kept up with them statistically and kind of seeing where they are in the standings, but I just haven't seen a lot of them. So let's work through this together. All right, the Tide got off to a great start. They swept Manhattan College. You'd expect that. I mean, the Jaspers, you know, are the Jaspers. Probably more of a basketball school than a baseball school. But they take care of them. Only one of those games was truly competitive, and that was a Sunday game. Alabama with a pair of shutouts in games 1 and 2, but the Sunday game is 11-8 in favor of Alabama. They didn't take care of Middle Tennessee State, and then Alabama State comes in for a 7-inning affair. Alabama absolutely rolled through Valpo. You know, we've had them recently as a non-conference opponent. But, you know, they were the second weekend non-conference foe for Alabama. And all three of these games ended in a mercy rule. Yeah, 14-2, 13-3, 11-1. So getting it done, and of course you look up and it's like, man, these guys are just kind of rolling through. Well, then they go over to Birmingham, play at Regents Field. Took them 10 innings, but they knocked off UAB. They go down to the Frisco Classic, and they take down number 21, Indiana, in 7. They get by Arizona, 7-6, and then they drop their first game of the year to Dallas Baptist. And so really, really good start. Midweek game against Troy comes. They survive that thing 8-7. And then Lipscomb. You know, Lipscomb recently beat Tennessee, as you guys are aware. And again, Lipscomb was picked to win the Atlantic Sun. Now, they're not going to unless something crazy happens. They're currently 11-10 in the Atlantic Sun. Of course, that's the same conference as Austin Peay. Austin Peay and Stetson, just one game out of first place. Jacksonville, the Dolphins, lead the Atlantic Sun with a 15-6 record. But overall, they're just 22-20. Looking at Austin Peay, they're 28-16. Them and Stetson both are having pretty good years. But you're not going to get an at-large bid for Atlantic Sun unless something really crazy happens. Occasionally it happens, but nevertheless, you go back to Alabama's series with Lipscomb, and it was very, very one-sided, as you would imagine. Alabama takes all three games. That Friday night game, or excuse me, Saturday, the first game on Saturday, I guess they got pushed back to the doubleheader. That was 20-13 game. It's pretty rough, man. Pretty rough. All right, so Alabama then heads to Southern Miss, and Alabama's playing well, feeling good about life, and they go down to Hattiesburg and go to Pete Taylor Park and come away with an L. Southern Miss gets them 9-7. But again, a great start in non-conference. And you go back and look, I mean, you only drop two games in non-conference, you feel pretty good about your standing. You're like, you know, hey, I know it's going to get tougher, but man, we've built up some confidence. They host Tennessee that first weekend. And Friday night, they get shelled to 11-3. But they bounce back and take Saturday and Sunday to beat number 5 Tennessee. And we're all thinking, okay, Alabama may be for real. I didn't think so. I thought Alabama and Georgia both were kind of fool's gold, kind of middle-of-the-pack SEC teams. So after that Tennessee game, they take it down. They travel to Montgomery to play Alabama State, beat those guys 15-7. And then they go to Georgia. And they take on the Bulldogs. And I thought it was a situation here. Somebody's a fraud, somebody's not. Georgia sweeps all three games. But they were very competitive. 9-5, 6-5, 10-5, or mostly competitive. But all of a sudden you look up and like, hey, Alabama's 2-4 in the SEC. They'll be okay, right? Or maybe not. They get Belmont in they play Belmont in Huntsville. That's interesting. Take the show on the road and play the Bruins. Yeah. All right, so then South Carolina makes their way to Alabama, number 10 South Carolina. And again, I've always felt like South Carolina is probably a top 25 team. They're not a top 10 team. But Alabama gets them 2 out of 3. It's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. They win Thursday and Friday, and they lose a one-run affair on Saturday. So now you think, okay, well, maybe Alabama's a little better than we thought. They go to Samford. We've done that too. I like going to Samford. I do. And I like going over there for you guys, right? Those of you that live in the greater Birmingham area. I think it's a cool thing we go over there. But we do. And it seems like every time we go, it's a bit of a tussle. But same thing for Alabama. They go over there and win 11-10 over Samford. And then they go to Kentucky. And we kept waiting. And we've had to wait a long time. Kentucky still leads the Southeastern Conference right now, tied with Arkansas. But they go to Lexington and get smacked around pretty good. The only game that's really competitive was the first game, 6-2. And then Kentucky wins 7-0 and 10-1 to close out a series. Alabama then hosts South Alabama. They drop that one, too. And then go to Arkansas. Or excuse me, they hosted Arkansas. and they lose game one of that series. And so all of a sudden, you know, this losing streak becomes a little bit concerning. It's a five-game losing streak. Well, they bounce back. They beat Arkansas in 10 and then take the Sunday game. So series winners over the number one Razorbacks at the time, that's a loud win. Then the next thing you know, you host UAB and you drop that midweek game to them. Tough. Well, after that, A&M rose to number one in the country, and then they went into Tuscaloosa and took two out of three. They win the Friday game, had a doubleheader on Friday, won them both. And then Alabama comes back and wins a 10-9 game on Saturday to salvage a game. Samford then rolls into Tuscaloosa and gets beat 14-5. And then last weekend, of course, Alabama goes to Oxford and takes 2 of 3. They win 12-0 on Thursday. Mercy ruled the Rebels. And then lose a 9-8 game on Friday and bounce back to win the series 10-3 on Saturday. But no midweek game for them this week. But again, you kind of look at the SEC numbers here and you realize, you know, this is a team that's been a lot of these one-run type ball games, as have we. But they're not just going to go away. They're not. Now, one of the big issues with them has been on the pitching side. Had a lot of injuries. Riley Quick, a guy that stayed pursued as a offensive lineman and then told him he could pitch too. He elects to go to Alabama. And I remember when this happened, when he committed to Alabama baseball, some people were like, well, it's Alabama. And all due respect, if you're playing baseball and you pick Alabama over Mississippi State, it's almost like telling me you don't want to compete. I could get, okay, well, it's a football scholarship, but yeah, it's Bama. Yeah, Bama doesn't have any real rich baseball tradition this generation. I mean, it's just true. I mean, I'm not being disrespectful, but that's just the reality of it. So it doesn't make any sense to me. We're going to pick Alabama. It's Bama. Yeah. Yeah. We're Mississippi State. Get it right. All right, so let's look here at the inside some numbers here. This Alabama offense is good, and they've had some guys, some newcomers that have kind of stepped up and done some big things for them. You know, Gage Miller, he's got 18 tanks this year. Leads a team with a 386 average. Pretty impressive, right? And this is a team, too, that, you know, lost a lot, had to hit the portal hard. And you start working through all that, and you still have to kind of take all these personalities and skill sets and find a way to kind of, you know, mesh them together as a team. And you need somebody out there to kind of lead the way. In many respects, that's been Gage Miller. You know, come from Bishop State Community College. You know, he's a guy originally from Pennsylvania that went down and did some good things in the junior college ranks and then ends up at Alabama. You know, he's a first-year player up there, and maybe a guy that you haven't heard much from just because Alabama baseball hadn't made a ton of headlines. But Gage Miller is a guy that can absolutely swing it. Absolutely. And he's proven it. Now, Matt Gassetti was a catcher that we saw some last year. He's having the best year of his college career, too, hitting 364. He's got 4 tanks, 35 RBI. And again, this is another solid guy in the lineup. Now, Justin LeBron is a freshman. And as Etheridge told me, they brought him in, and he was kind of a defense guy first. Well, now this kid is hitting 3-hole. Yeah, he's hitting 346, got 11 jacks, 32 ribbies. And so you start working through the top half of this order, and you realize you got some guys with some real home run potential. Now, T.J. McCants, former Ole Miss Rebel, you talk about a guy that improved his standing in life. He likes to go on a transfer portal. And, you know, Mississippi State kind of kicked the tires with him too. Guys, he is having the best year of his college career. Now, and I will say this, it's a credit to Ole Miss fans. When they showed up last weekend, TJ got a really nice ovation from the Ole Miss fans up there. Of course, he was part of that national championship team at Ole Miss. But, yeah, there was no love lost. I mean, excuse me, there's no bitterness there. So it was nice to see that. I remember seeing the clip that made the rounds of TJ going out and getting the applause and kind of tipping the cap to fans. But this is a guy here. Again, he goes in the portal, and sometimes you see guys that have a transformation. They get with a different hitting coach or they get with a different pitching coach, and all of a sudden they kind of see something It's a minor adjustment that kind of changes things, and that's what you're seeing with T.J. McCants. He doesn't have that long, loopy swing that he used to have. And guys, he's hit 13 jacks this year. Yeah, T.J. McCants, a guy that in many respects was kind of a walking out at Ole Miss, but the change of scenery's done a good thing for him. But 13 jacks and 44 ribbies, that is loud. That is absolutely loud. We're in 44, Reggie Jackson's number. Ian Petrucci hitting 320. Also a regular. Just 5 jacks and 36 ribbies. But all, you know, we talked about that lineup last week. You know, at Vanderbilt. You know, there's not a lot of dead outs, right? I mean, you get a lot of guys in there, the team, they're hitting really well. And so you never got that inning where it's like, okay, great. We got 7, 8, 9 coming up. We can relax. This Alabama order is a little bit like that, and it's much better than the Ole Miss order. You know, Ole Miss only had the one guy, Ethan Legge, hitting above 300, and now he may be on the shelf this weekend. This Alabama group is different, though. They have 5 regulars that are hitting above 300, and as a team, they're hitting 311. So the name of this game is going to be Mississippi State's ability to get Alabama out, because this is a group that's going to put the ball in play. I mean, you start working through these strikeout numbers. Guys, they struck out 297 times. You say, well, Steve, that's a lot. They struck out their opponents almost 100 more times. They're putting the ball in play. Now, they're also a team that's grounded into a lot of double plays. It's kind of part of the deal, too. But when you start running these numbers here offensively, the numbers don't match up to the record. And the reason that is Alabama's not a great defensive team. They're also not a great pitching team because of some injuries. And part of the issue, too, is with the defense is it's not like they kick the ball around, as Etheridge says. They're 974 in the league. But there's a lot of balls they just haven't been able to get to. Don't always have the range that you're looking for. So you hit some balls hard, and then you see what happens, right? Good things happen when you hit the baseball hard. That's how the game works, right? So let's look inside this pitching stuff. Now, Greg Ferrone has emerged as probably their best pitcher. He's got a complete game, leads the team in ERA at 3.10 among the regulars. 12 appearances, 11 starts. He started out as their primary midweek pitcher. And then when Riley Quick goes down with injury, he moves to the weekend. And it's done outstanding. I mean, and poor old Riley Quick, man. I guess he goes just 3 innings in his first start of the year, and then he's done. I mean, nobody's going to feel sorry for Alabama, but it's one of those things, too, you look at, it just really, it's disappointing to see a young person have to deal with that, and sadly, it's part of baseball these days. But, you know, Ferrone's a guy that we'll definitely see. He'll be one of the starters on the weekend, and he is a guy, too, that really challenges hitters. He's not a huge strikeout guy. And what I mean by that is he's not Hagen Smith by any stretch. He's got 54 punch-outs against just 16 walks. So a little bit over 3-1. Has allowed 7 home runs on the year, but basically he competes in his own. This is a guy that gets under barrels, gets a lot of soft contact. Opponents are hitting just 230 against him. But he's a guy, leads him. He's been a workhorse, 52 innings pitched, but you kind of do the math on that, and it works out to about 5 innings a game. He's worked a little bit deeper as of late, but that's a real concern for them because the bullpen is, in many respects, really, really thin. And a lot of it's because you've had to move some guys, you know, to the weekend, and then all of a sudden, then you've got to have some other buddies, some guys step up and pitch in the midweek. But, you know, Zane Adams, another guy that's been a regular for them, 10 starts on the year, 4.43 ERA. Another guy that works around 4 or 5 innings a ball game. We expect to see him. Ben Hess is the guy that they really thought was going to be their guy, and it just hadn't worked out for him. ERA of 7.31. He's made 11 starts on the year, and he's not working deep in ball games. Averaging just at 4 innings an outing. And that's brutal. That's absolutely brutal. And part of the issue, too, is that, you know, he's just a guy that hadn't been able to compete in his own a little bit. Not be able to get long, not be able to be effective. And so 38 hits, 36 runs. 10 of those have been home runs. So he is a guy that's been somewhat susceptible to the long ball. You get a little deeper in this thing. You know, Alton Davis, of course, is a guy on the back end, really good player, We've seen him before too. Very competitive kid too, for sure. But yeah, four saves on the year for him. You know, he is the back end guy, and he can throw twice on a weekend. The question is can they get the game to him? Yeah, I'm a big proponent of this. If I'm going to lose on Friday, I want to know as soon as possible so I can kind of figure out how I want to do things. You know, because I'm not going to go throw big arms, because it doesn't matter how bad you get beat on Friday night. I mean, just throw a walk-on or the water boy or whatever, just get the game over and mop it up. But you want to save some arms for Sunday, because the last thing you want is to be in that 2-3-run game in the middle innings and you got to go cash in some big arms and you exhaust them and lose the ball game. It's tough. Aide Moser was the guy they expected to be their Sunday guy. He's made 15 appearances, 3 starts, ERA of 9.24, which is last on the team. So a 5.30 ERA as a team, but pitching has been a real issue for them. And it's not just been, you know, hey, walk in the ballpark. It's just about getting guys out. You've got to be able to get guys out. Opponents are hitting 253 against them. But when you start running through the numbers here, they're just, you know, they're going to walk you a little bit. But they are, you know, they want to compete. But they're a team that, in order to avoid the walk sometimes, they end up catching too much to plate. It's true. Look at the conference numbers, too. I love when we can toggle between those. On the pitching side, we'll start there. ERA as a team is 6.71 against SEC opponents only. That's a big number. It really is. And again, you look at Verón here, 3.68. And that's decent. I mean, hey, that guy can go out there and get you 3 to 4, allow just 3 or 4 runs in a game over the course of 9 innings, which, again, he hadn't worked a complete game. I guess he has one complete game. But that could save some bullpen for the rest of the weekend. So, you know, that's a big part of things. It's just working deeper in ball games. But they have really struggled to do that. In Southeastern Conference play, they do not have a regular pitcher with an ERA better than 3.68. That's tough. Now, on the hitting side, just in conference only, you know, again, you want to see who's doing well, who's not. Cade Snell is a guy we didn't mention earlier. He's not one of the starters, but kind of a part-time guy. He's got 15 starts in 21 of the SEC games and hitting .400. Mainly a singles hitter, but maybe that's not a fair assessment. He's got 26 hits and 7 of them are doubles. He's got 3 tanks too, but you know, Will Hodo is another guy that we know pretty well. He's hitting .308 in SEC play, which is better than his overall average. He's less than .300, but you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, some of these guys that we know. You know, William Hamader is another guy that's been around, but he's basically played as a reserve. But you start working through these numbers and you begin to realize guys like Justin LeBron, freshman shortstop like him, guys like him hitting .354 in SEC play, you just don't see that very often. You just don't. It just doesn't happen that way. T.J. McCants, 1 home run in SEC play, an average of .293. But again, happy for the kid to kind of get out of Oxford and kind of see you know, what it looks like to play for somebody else. And it's, again, it's sometimes it's a bat path issue, and that was really kind of the case for him. Looking at some fielding numbers here with Alabama, again, in conference play. Conference play, it's been .975. And you're just kind of working through this. You know, Justin LeBron, the shortstop, you know, again, he was supposed to be a defense early guy. He leads the team in errors in SEC play. And I guess we'll look at it overall, too. Looking at the errors here, yeah, Justin LeBron with 10 errors on the year. And again, you're going to have some of that with a freshman. That's not a criticism of him. It's just kind of a statement of fact. But I like this Alabama offense, and I like State's opportunities to win this ball game, win this series. And it's one we really need to get. I mean, we talk about the possibilities, right? And we talked about the shift in conversation that, hey, we may be making a coaching change at the end of the year, and now all of a sudden we're in a position that we could potentially host. And we're not there yet. We're not there. You got 9 SEC games left to play. You need to win at least 5 of those 4 but if you could pick up an extra one somewhere along the way. And I truly believe 17 SEC wins gets you in the conversation to host. I think 18 probably wraps it up. If you can find a way to get to 18, of course, that means you've got to win 6 games of the final 9, which is certainly possible. But it means you're going to have to either win all 3 series or pick up a sweep somewhere. And this Alabama team is a tough team. And they really are. You look at 9-12 in the league and say, okay, well, they're behind us. But, they're still playing for something meaningful, too. That's important to understand. We're not going to play many teams that are just playing out the string the rest of the way. And you got to think when Missouri comes in here, they may already know their fate. They may still be playing to get into Hoover. So we're not going to get an off weekend at any point. Of course, Arkansas is vying for an SEC championship and the opportunity to be a top 8 national seed. And it's certainly at this point, they've earned that. But they're not there yet. And when you look at the Arkansas schedule, we talk about these teams that are ahead of Mississippi State, in the SEC standings. You're like, well, who's the most likely, to come down? Who's the team that may, kind of cool off a little bit down the stretch? Well, Arkansas is one of those teams. They certainly are. Kentucky could be one of those teams. Could Mississippi State play their way into a top 4 situation? Well, that would certainly bode well for Mississippi State. But, looking here at the Arkansas schedule, this is important to understand. Arkansas is in Lexington this weekend. We touched on it earlier this week. They're 39-7 overall and 16-5 in conference. They're going to play the only other team that's won 16 games so far. But you got to go to Lexington and play a very, very tough Kentucky team. And I don't just mean tough because they're number 8 in the country, but they're a mentally tough team in their own yard. You could certainly see them taking this series. Well, then next week, State goes to Arkansas, and then Arkansas goes to College Station, Texas. And let's be honest about this. If Arkansas wins the Southeastern Conference, and I picked them to begin the year to do that, I didn't think A&M was going to be as good as they have been. Didn't think Kentucky was going to be as good as they have been. But down the stretch, this Arkansas team is going to earn it. You got to go on the road and play the team that you're tied with in the SEC standings, and then you finish up the year against a team that's a game behind you, the number one team in the country. It's brutal, man. It is. And so you think about that Arkansas schedule. There is some room to move there because I think they're going to drop some games. Now, they're capable of winning those games, but offensively, this Arkansas team has been a little bit, I guess you'd say offensively challenged this year. I think that's a fair assessment. And so if they get into a situation, they get into a slugfest with somebody where maybe they have a pitcher having a tough day, it's going to be a difficult day at the yard. And you look at this Kentucky team, 33-9 overall, 16-5 in the SEC. And, of course, they host Arkansas this weekend. That's tough, number 2 team in the country. Well, then they go to Florida. And you feel like, of course, Florida's playing for something, but you got a chance to go down there and get that one. And then they finish up with Vanderbilt at home. So none of that is a walk in the park by any stretch of the imagination. And if you look at, Texas A&M, you feel like those guys probably have a chance to do some pretty good things. Their schedule is not maybe as daunting as Arkansas and Kentucky. And I'm pulling that up. You can hear me type it, I'm sure. But look at the A&M schedule. Of course, you close out with that Arkansas thing, and then that'll be great, and that'll impact a lot for the NCAA tournament. That will impact seed in a major way. I think we all see it for what it is. And then you get a little deeper into this thing, and you start thinking, okay, A&M will beat Alex Box this weekend. It's a launching pad down there, and there's some power in this A&M lineup. And I like A&M to take a series. LSU, of course, still trying to play for something. They're not guaranteed a spot in Hoover either. And then A&M goes to Ole Miss. And then at home against Arkansas. So a much more favorable schedule for the Aggies. And you start thinking now, if Arkansas and Kentucky beat each other up, and Arkansas has, maybe drops a game to a Mississippi State team, you start thinking A&M may be the team that wins the SEC this year. Because, again, they have the more favorable schedule. And then the final team that's ahead of us is Tennessee. And their schedule, not as daunting as Arkansas, and probably not as good as A&M. And that's the thing. Again, you begin to work all through this stuff, and you start thinking, you know, every game matters this time of year. I mean, you always need it. You do. But you want to be playing your best baseball when it's the most meaningful time of year, and that's kind of where we are. Tennessee, this weekend, as you guys know, will play Florida. They were scheduled to start last night, but the game got postponed due to rain. So it'll be a Friday doubleheader and then a game on Saturday. But you feel like, hey, Tennessee should take that series at Florida. Well, then they got to go to Nashville. That'll be interesting. And then you get South Carolina at Lindsey Nelson. So they're playing three teams that still have something very much to play for. And two of those are on the road. And so, yeah, there is a chance for State to move up into the top four and earn that bye in the SEC tournament. And, of course, the more important thing beyond just making the tournament and being a top four is it is an absolute rarity for a team in the top four of the Southeastern Conference standings not to host an NCAA regional. And so we just have to win some games. There is a real opportunity for some traffic to clear in front of us as some of the teams that we're chasing are going to play head-to-head. Big part of things. And to be honest with you, we need Vanderbilt and Georgia to win some games for us. You know, we don't play Kentucky. And so if somebody out there that we've defeated beats Kentucky, well, then it helps our RPI. And, of course, there's still the whole thing about, you know, playing North Alabama. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how we handle that. The D1 Baseball Committee reached out and said, hey, don't be canceling games late because of RPI. You know, so that's a thing, too. We may end up having to play that game, and our RPI is dreadful. We played Alcorn State. We dropped, I think, 8 or 9 spots in the RPI. There's not enough time to kind of make that ground up. So that's why taking on Alabama this weekend, who has an RPI in top 15, that's why every win against them matters so much more. But we just need to take care of business. Mississippi State takes care of their business. Everything else kind of works itself out. It's as simple as that. You keep winning, other people around you will win and some will lose. But the good thing is some of those teams that lose will be teams that are ahead of you in the standings. So a lot left to play for Mississippi State. All right, time for today's top 10 list is always brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is a mortgage professional. Blair is a guy that knows how to get things done. Whether you're looking for a game day condo, which is always a good option to consider, that could be your retirement home. Say, you know what, hey, the kids are out of the house. We don't need as much house. We'll just go downsize and live in Starkville and be able to go to all the ball games. What a great retirement that would be, right? Just go sit and enjoy the Diamond Dogs, be there for men's and women's basketball, go to some softball, some volleyball. I mean, you could just make that your whole life. What could be better than that? And the grandkids come to go to good ball games and come stay with you. Yeah. But if you're just starting out in life, looking to buy a home for the first time, maybe life has forced you into a reset of sorts, you can't do better than Blair Chandler. Visit him at closewithblair.com. Let me give you his phone number, 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. 23 years of experience. Blair knows how to get things done. A true bulldog, a season ticket holder in multiple places, multiple sports, has a place here in town, in addition to his place down there in Madison County. But he's one of us. I like to keep business in the family whenever we can. That's closewithblair.com. Okay, so Roy Samanthi, my friend, your friend, and, you know, a guy that's basically kind of stepped up and said, hey, I'd love to put these lists on Spotify for you. Roy had an idea last year, and I thought we had done this, but we didn't. And I don't know if you're aware of this. So here is the text from Roy. So May is Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month. you may not know about, know this about me, but I fall into this category. Of course, Roy is from Philippine descent. And so he goes, hey, can we put a playlist together to celebrate your sidekick being a Filipino-American? How about a Filipino-American singer's playlist? And so I said, sounds like a good idea. And I thought we did this, but we did not. So we're going to honor Roy Samanti and all of our great friends that are Asian American Pacific Islanders in your month. This is a really diverse list, and you're going to be surprised at some of the people that are on this list. So with that in mind, let's get it going here. Okay, number 10, it's a country song. How about that? Yeah, that's right. Neil McCoy, a descendant from the Philippines. We're going to go with the shake from Neil McCoy, right? Because that's what we're looking for, right? The song is about women, you know. But it's like, you know, some guys prefer this, some guys prefer that. Neil said he prefers the shake. All right, number 9, I really dig this one. It's Haley Steinfeld. I love the airy, breathy nature of this. I love the kind of the overproduced sound. It really has kind of a haunting sound to it. It's Afterlife from Haley Steinfeld. I dig it. I do. It feels like something from a different time in many respects. All right, number 8. I don't know how this guy made the list, but Roy gave me the list, the name. I picked the songs. He gave me a list of artists. But Enrique Iglesias also has some Pacific Islander heritage in his life. It's true. And I picked this song. I know many of you thought we'd go Balamos, but we're not. Now, again, with this rasp that I have these days, I couldn't do my Spanish whisper. But I went with Do You Know. You know, do you know what it feels like loving someone? You know, and it reminds me of the great Rob and Big episode when they go through the car wash and they put this song on and everybody dances around. And it's such a hilarious clip. And also, too, I'll tell you one of my finest moments on Twitter. Is years ago, Big Black followed me on Twitter. God rest his soul. The pride of Wiggins, Mississippi. A former Stone County High School Tomcat passed away. Man, I hate that. I do. I loved Robin Big. I used to DVR that at Jet Show, and I know they play Ridiculousness all the time now, but the Robin Big stuff was amazing. It absolutely was. I loved it. It was so funny, and I know some of it was probably scripted, but it was a real reality show that brought a lot of enjoyment to a lot of people, and I dug it. I really did. Of course, they went from Robin Big, and then they went to the Fantasy Factory, and then eventually Big Black left the show. And yeah, you hate that. You do. And but yeah, it was pretty cool when he followed me on Twitter. I know it sounds like a minor thing, but Big Black, Mississippi State guy, used to always tweet negative things about Ole Miss. And yeah, he's a Bulldog. God rest his soul. All right, number 7, and kind of an homage here to the 70s rock band Player. They had a great song called Baby Come Back. Well, Vanessa Hudgens was made famous by High School Musical. She was a love interest, very talented. Has a song said Come Back to Me. And of course, they have the, I don't know if it's truly a sample or they're just kind of singing it in the same cadence, but it's Baby Come Back. Yeah. Any kind of fool could see. I was wrong, and I just can't live without you. We grew up with that stuff, man. Those guys in the 70s could really play. They really could. The bass lines in the 70s, amazing. Amazing. Ace, Player, Exile, bands like that. Great. But, yeah, Vanessa Hudgens, Come Back to Me, number 7. Number 6, I absolutely love the song. And I don't listen to a lot of pop music. My girls would be really proud that I spent some time listening to Olivia Rodrigo. But the song Happier is one of those songs that many people wouldn't record, right? Because like everybody wants to put their best foot forward and things like that. But there is some vulnerability with this song. And again, it's kind of that airy, breathy song from another era. I absolutely love what they did. The production value on this is amazing. But it's the song Happier. And it's basically like, I want you to be happy, but not happier than you were when we were us, right? And it's like, we haven't been able to stay together, and you've moved on, and I do want you to be happy, but I want the time that you're with me, because I'm a little bit selfish and narcissistic, to be the happiest time in your life, right? But yeah, no matter what you say, what you're willing to admit publicly, we've all kind of felt that way. Like when somebody else moves on from us, which is hard. I mean, it is so difficult. You know, relationships can be very difficult. But when you find out that somebody is kind of moved on in life, you know, it makes you do some self-evaluation. It really does. And you're like, you know, hey, we can't be together. I don't want you to be unhappy, but I still want to know that I'm special to you, right? And maybe that's a little bit teenagerish, but it's how we all feel. And no matter what you say, I mean, what you do, everybody has that. She just happened to put it to song. All right, number five, Nicole Schlesinger, who is an absolute bombshell, was the front lady of the Pussycat Dolls. They had a huge hit, and every woman in the world sang this song. It's Don't You. Don't You Wish Your Girlfriend Was Hot Like Me? Well, we talk about being a little bit full of it. You know, there we go. But it was a huge hit, and they only did a couple of albums. But, you know, of course, she's done X Factor and stuff. Again, super talented lady, and very easy to look at, for sure. Pussycat Dolls, kind of a corporate music type deal, but had some hits, had a big following, for sure. All right, number four, and I think this top four is absolutely excellent. There's no pop songs left, just so you know. We're through the country and through the pop segment of our show. Number four, one of the greatest stories in the history of rock music is that of Arnel Pineda. Now, Arnel was with a band called The Zoo out in the Philippines. You know, he kind of kicked it around or whatever, and he was with a cover band, and they used to do all this classic rock stuff, Led Zeppelin and stuff. And somebody had posted some videos of Arnel singing Journey songs. And, of course, Steve Perry, you know, departed the band, a lot of health issues there. And Neil Sean, the legendary guitarist from Journey, who also played with Santana at Woodstock. Yeah, how about that? You didn't know that? It's true. At 16 years of age, on stage at Woodstock. Craziness. But all that understood, Neil Sean sees these videos of YouTube and says this guy was really good. And so he reaches out to this guy on YouTube to get the contact information. So he emails Arnel Pineda, and Arnel dismissed it as a hoax. But they eventually got together, and he does do a really good job. He sounds a lot like Steve Perry. And they put an album out. They've had a couple albums out. But the first big hit for Journey without Steve Perry, with Arnel Pineda singing, was After All These Years. It is an absolutely incredible ballad. It's about a long-term relationship, you know. It's one of those songs, too, that will give you a bit of gratitude, for sure. All right, number three, Steve D, the, I guess Josh Todd calls him, you know, the Filipino madman, or whatever. Had a chance to see these guys a few times, saw him at Rocklahoma, thank Mark. And so Steve D is a guitar player for Buck Cherry. And if you don't know Buck Cherry, you should. And they're always out touring, always. And I go back to kind of the gateway song for many of us into the band Buck Cherry. It is a song about doing drugs. But even if it wasn't, the guitar on this is incredible. The tone, incredible. It is a classic rock riff in many respects. It's a song lit up. And many of you right now have forgotten about that song, and you're going to put it on. You're going to be jamming it all weekend. You're going to say, I'm so glad I listened to Boneyard. It reminds me of all my old favorites. I don't do drugs, and I haven't for a long time, but I love the song Lit Up. I absolutely love this song, and I do feel somewhat guilty at times singing the lyrics, but this is a banger, man. Kids today talk about, oh, this is a banger. You know, a lot of those kids have no clue what it is, but Lit Up from Buck Cherry, we had never even heard of this band, and all of a sudden this video is on MTV and everywhere else, and the song's on radio, and you're like, who are these guys? Absolutely phenomenal band. Number two, there are a few people in my lifetime that I truly consider musical geniuses, but Bruno Mars is one of them. I think Bruno Mars plays 18 or 19 instruments. His ability to compose songs, absolutely legendary. Has a huge following. And that's the thing, there are some artists that kind of transcend genres, and Bruno Mars is one of them. And so we're going to go with Locked Out of Heaven for number two from Bruno Mars. I love the percussion on this. It's great. Love Bruno Mars. When he did that Super Bowl halftime show, it was incredible. Number one, and you may not have known this, this may be even a bigger surprise than finding out that Enrique Iglesias has ties to the Pacific Islanders, but it's Kirk Hammett from Metallica. Yeah, let that sink in for a second. Yeah. You always wondered how he kept a good tan all the time. Well, now you know, right? Kirk Hammett, one of the most legendary guitar players of all time. And Kirk may be one of the best bandmates ever, too. Like, if you've seen Some Kind of Monster, the documentary Metallica, like, Kirk is, like, the most peaceful, down-to-earth guy that never gets involved in any drama. It's very rare you even see him get aggravated, but, man, he is an absolute virtuoso on the guitar. So we're going to go with Metallica's Master of Puppets is number one. And, guys, I'll tell you this. That whole going back and thinking about that whole story, you know, how Kirk came to be, he left Exodus to replace Dave Mustaine. Dave Mustaine, of course, kicked out of Metallica, started Megadeth. And, you know, now here you are, you know, Kirk Hammett steps in and really kind of elevates the band to something else. And again, I'm a big Dave Mustaine guy too. And one of the things I love about Dave is his willingness to kind of say what's on his mind, even if it offends other people. It's funny, everybody has the right to be offended these days. It's true. It's true. And Dave is a guy that can be offensive. He has said some things that many of us think just didn't have the courage to say. But that said, you know, Kirk was with Exodus, and they were a up-and-coming band. But Kirk had some technical skill that I think kind of exceeded that of Dave Mustaine. And I saw recently Dave said the three best, you know, metal rhythm players of all time are Malcolm Young, James Hetfield, and himself. And there's probably some truth to that, to be quite honest with you. But when I go back and I think about the Metallica catalog, and yeah, it's become such a huge machine these days. But when I go back to you being introduced to Metallica, I remember when the new stuff came out, like my friend Jason Dawsey was the biggest Metallica fan in the world. Whenever the new stuff came out, I was going to hear it. I didn't have to go buy the CDs because he was going to immediately have that available. You know, and he'd go dub you a copy. You know, he's like, hey, you got to have this. It's great. You know, it's because of Jason Dawsey I really got into Metallica. I was in Metallica before the one video even hit. But my favorite Metallica album is Master of Puppets, without any question. And many of you got introduced to that song by watching Stranger Things on Netflix, and I'm so ready for Stranger Things to return. I absolutely love it. I'll probably go back and watch it again before the new season comes out. And I follow them on Twitter, and they're always teasing something. I'm so ready for that. I loved the last season of Stranger Things. And, of course, Eddie plays the solo to Master of Puppets in the Upside Down to try to save everybody else. And so all of us, I remember Ani said, well, now we know Master of Puppets will be the number one song in America come Monday. And it was. It's pretty amazing. It really is. But I'm so glad when music of my teen years kind of gets reintroduced to popular culture. And there's a lot of that on Stranger Things. So that's my top 10 list. So congratulations to Roy and to all of the artists and all of those that claim heritage as Asian American Pacific Islanders. I never knew that month existed. So we learned something. And so we celebrate that music. We'll be back on Monday with another fresh top 10 list. You never know what direction we may go. You never not thought today we'd have Neil McCoy and Metallica and the Pussycat Dolls on the same list together. Yeah, and then threw in Enrique Iglesias just for kicks. Yeah, it's a great thing. So if you have ideas for the top 10 list, reach out, let us know. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy on Twitter at Dogmatic67. That's D-A-W-G. MATIC67. He doesn't tweet out pictures of his food or silly stuff like that. You know, he doesn't like cut his finger and like tweet it out so everybody can say, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, so you can consider following him. It's safe. Usually it's all Mississippi State stuff and then our great list. And if you're looking to find our list to listen to as you travel or work throughout your day, you can find him on Spotify under that same handle, Dogmatic67. DAWGMATIC67. Just follow. You'll be happy you did. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, right? Campus Bookmart. That's the king or queen, no matter how you want to slice it. That is the pinnacle of places to go get Mississippi State merchandise. A lot of people try to peddle you Mississippi State merch. You do. I mean, you get on Facebook and you're scrolling along and it's, you know, some site pops up with some unlicensed t-shirt. Next thing you know, you order it. It takes 2 months to get here and it's crimson, right? Here's the deal. Stick with the winners. The winners reside and work at Campus Bookmart. Go by and see their smiley faces next time you're in town. You can peruse their fine selections of Mississippi State merch, whether you're looking to update your wardrobe, maybe outfit a new room, the fan cave. Maybe you need some Mississippi State wall art. Maybe you need a diploma frame. That's always a great gift. It's a great grandparent gift or a favorite aunt and uncle gift because your graduate's going to put that thing in the frame and they're going to keep it forever, right? Forever. You don't trade out frames later. You don't. And so it's a great memorable gift, a very thoughtful gift too. So great selection of diploma frames there at Campus Bookmart. If you can't make it to town, visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. Use promo code BSR, right? Beautiful Steve Robertson saving you shipping on all orders over $75 just by listening to this show. I love Campus Bookmart. I haven't been in there in a few weeks. I need to go by there and check them out. And because, you know, it's that time of year. You know, got friends and, you know, nephews and nieces and people like that that are graduating. And I like to get them Mississippi State merch. And another gift idea, too, if you have a high school graduate that's making their way to Mississippi State, maybe get them a gift card to Campus Bookmart. Yeah, think about that. Or just buy them some merch and have it shipped directly to them. You don't want them showing up on campus underprepared. The more Mississippi State merchandise we have in our lives, the happier we are. All right, let's take a look around the league this weekend. It's going to be an interesting week. It always is. You know, and it's like one of the things that I said about last weekend's series. Ani and I were talking about this on a Dude Effect. I guess it was last night. But the thing about that series, and I hate to use hyperbole, but it reminds me, for all of you old guys, remember that 95 wild card series between the Yankees and the Mariners and how amazing that was? It was incredible. Because we're thinking, we don't need the wild card. And then we had that series, and you're like, man, this was so exciting. This series between Mississippi State and Vanderbilt, to me, was kind of reminiscent in the respect that every pitch mattered. Even in that 4-0 ball game, you felt like, hey, you know, we're one pitch away here from making a game of this. Every at-bat mattered. Every out mattered. And that's meaningful baseball, right? You're not just hoping, oh, we just got to go get one. You know, we have to get one. We needed to get two. We did. And what a heroic effort by the Bulldogs on Sunday to get that thing done. One of those games, and I've seen a ton of them in person, that's one of those I'll never forget. It was a surreal moment. But, so this weekend, we're going to be doing some scoreboard watching ourselves. Again, as you know, we're trying to catch the top four. Going to be difficult to do, but maybe somebody can kind of meet us halfway. As mentioned earlier, Tennessee and Florida were unable to play last night. So it's going to be a doubleheader today. First pitch is going to be at 2 p.m. Central for game one. And then, you know, I guess 45 minutes after that, they'll play game two. I like Tennessee to take the series. You know, Caglione's going to be Caglione. There's just not a lot of depth in that Florida order that's going to carry you. They got some athletes, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's not a lot of easy outs, especially in the bottom half. It's reminiscent of Vanderbilt, except Vanderbilt doesn't have a star like Caglione. But I just think Tennessee, against the Florida pitching staff that has not lived up to their potential, I like Tennessee to take the series. I wouldn't rule out a sweep, but let's just call it 2-for-1. At some point, I think Cags gets them maybe on Sunday. All right, Vanderbilt's at Georgia. This is a game between the number 17 Vanderbilt Commodores and number 19 Georgia Bulldogs. Georgia has been very, very, very good at home. Now, this Vanderbilt lineup, as we mentioned, doesn't have some gaudy home run numbers. You know, you've got some guys out there that have some ability. And in that park, you may see some very offensive games. Now, I do believe Vanderbilt has better pitching than Georgia. So they may do a better job keeping Georgia in the yard. But it's been so difficult to win on the road this year. We're going to take Georgia 2-1 in a very entertaining and competitive series. And, of course, J.D. Thompson's back after a week suspension. And so that's... was the Sunday starter for Florida. You know, it was his first SEC start. He is a left-hander with a lot of talent. They do expect him to be a regular rotation guy next year. So that could be a factor in what I think will be a rubber match on Sunday. Arkansas is at Kentucky. Now, here's the thing about this one. I think this may be the most intriguing series of the weekend. Not just because it's the top two teams in the Southeastern Conference record-wise, but I think offensively, Arkansas is just a team that never really has an identity. You never know. Now, I'm going to pick Hagan Smith to win the night, and I know it's not really a hot take, but if Kentucky can win on Saturday, I think they take the series. I really do. I think they take the series. You always kind of tend to favor the home team in a rubber match on Sundays. You know, there are some exceptions, as you guys know. But maybe it's my heart rather than my head. But I'm going to pick Kentucky to take this series. And again, Kentucky's lost, you know, the last two series. So Arkansas is trying to make it three in a row. I just don't know pitching up there is going to have the same proficiency that it does in Fayetteville. And again, Hagan Smith tonight. And so you like Arkansas there, but I just think that Sunday game favors Kentucky. We've already discussed Tennessee and Florida. Ole Miss is at Auburn. You start looking at the Ole Miss schedule. And we have. We've talked about it. You know, I spoke to some people from the Ole Miss side on Tuesday and Wednesday at Pearl. You know, they're just still hoping to kind of get to Hoover. And it's one of those things, too, you begin to look at and you think about, is that going to be an easy path for them? And the answer to that question is no. When you're an average to below average team in the SEC, you can never assume anything. And they are. And listen, they'll get out there and compete. I just think with the injuries they've had on the pitching side, it's going to be tough to cover 27 innings, even on the road at Auburn. As bad as Auburn has been, Auburn's been competitive. Like I've seen some people say, Auburn is just terrible. Well, you look at their record and you would think that. But then when you look at the scores and see how many one-run losses they've had, I just wonder, can Ole Miss get McMurray and Irish out consistently? Mississippi State did, and that was really the difference in the series. You made that order have to beat you with the bottom half. They were incapable of doing so. I mean, I think we gave up five runs on the weekend. You typically win those series when you can hold people down like that. I mean, averaging less than two runs a game, it's tough to win. So this is probably Ole Miss's best chance to get a winning weekend. And then they go, they host A&M. That's a losing weekend. Then they go to LSU. And that may be the last hurrah for Mike Bianco. And so not a favorable schedule. Again, two of three on the road. And the one you get at home is the number one team in the country. But I just feel like this Auburn team at home will make this a very intriguing series. Like, and it's so interesting, people say, well, you know, Steve, I mean, you know, the bottom line is this, is, you know, Auburn hadn't been very good. I think if Ole Miss goes in there with that line of thinking, they're going to get beat. I really do. And especially without Ethan Leger in the lineup, I'm taking Auburn. I'm taking Auburn in the series. And again, kind of looking at the standings here really quick here. Auburn is four games behind Ole Miss. And I think it's safe to say Auburn's not going to Hoover. I think we all kind of see it for what it is. Ole Miss is tied with LSU and currently in the Hoover Field. Missouri 6-15. They're only a game back. And so you start thinking, could Missouri find a way to take one of those series and get up there and make up some ground there. Because I think Ole Miss is a team that could very much free fall out of this whole thing and miss Hoover. They'll be primed to play LSU, but I'm taking Auburn over Ole Miss this weekend. I do think it'll be a 2-1 type deal. And I think it's going to be a fun weekend for Auburn. But, Auburn's pitching has just been so beneath what expectations were. But I think when you also begin to think about the way this whole thing shakes out at home and then without potentially having Leger in the lineup, I think it tends to favor Auburn. Maybe it's just me. Maybe you see it differently. But that's how I see it. That's how I see this thing shaking out. All right, you know my thoughts on the Mississippi State Alabama series, but South Carolina is at Missouri. And South Carolina, again, I don't see them as a team that can get to Omaha. I don't. I think they're a team that may win a regional and lose a super. They're currently ranked 15th in the country. And I, to be honest with you, I'm just not sold on this team. That said, 9 weekends in, you have to admit, maybe perhaps they're better than people expected. They're in Missouri. And Missouri's been tough at home. All things considered, they really have been. Missouri has been one of those teams that's kind of an anomaly. You look up and say, what's happening here? You know, how does this continue to kind of break loose for them? You know, of course, they swept the series against Florida. But in many respects, that's been an outlier. Games have been competitive. But by and large, they have not been able to pull off SEC wins. But they're 13-10 at home and 20-26 overall. And you kind of scroll through these SEC home series for them. You know, so you opened up going to Arkansas. All right, well, that's never fun. Well, then Kentucky goes up there, and they get one from Kentucky. They go to Nashville. They get swept. So both road series have been sweeps. They sweep Florida. They go to Athens, Georgia, and they get one. So nice road win for them. They're first in SEC play. And then LSU goes up there and loses the middle game. And so when you begin to run through these things, they go to Knoxville and get swept. But those games were competitive. They get beat 3-2, 3-2. And now South Carolina will come in this weekend. And, so I expect maybe Missouri to get a game, but I think South Carolina takes the series. And, of course, Texas A&M at LSU. It's so hard for me to expect anybody to sweep LSU in Baton Rouge. You know, we had a chance to do it in 21 and couldn't close the deal. We should have. Remember, we had the big lead, and Sarantola just kind of choked it away there in the first. But this LSU team is so interesting. And, again, I think in many respects it goes back to the whole thing of, you know, how do you want to manage roster procurement? You know, do you want to build a roster of high school players that are going to develop and be in your program for a couple of years? Because it's not like football. And the transfer portal hadn't hurt us as much, maybe like even basketball. But this LSU team at home is 21-8, 29-17 overall. Played a ton of games at home, but they're 7-14 in the conference. And it's clear there are some chemistry issues. And what I mean by that, maybe not emotionally or relationship-wise, but as far as buying in. You know, and I think when you go out and get a bunch of mercenaries, that's kind of what you have to deal with. You know, it's tough to kind of meld that together. But, Florida went in there and took 2 out of 3. At the time, Florida was number 8 in the country, and it kind of legitimized Florida for a little bit. But I think it also was an indictment on maybe who LSU was. Maybe LSU wasn't who we thought they'd be. Then they go to Fayetteville, and they get swept. But, again, those games are 7-4, 4-3, 7-5. And maybe on that Saturday game, you remember Tommy White hit the controversial foul ball that many thought was a home run that would have given LSU the lead. Not so they would have held it, but they could have got it. Well, then Vanderbilt goes down there and takes 2 of 3 in Alex Box. And we know the caliber of this Vanderbilt team. They're a good team. LSU then goes to Tennessee and loses to all 3. And they go to Missouri and take 2 out of 3. But they have not protected the home turf as well as you might expect. Auburn does take Game 3 of that series last weekend. A&M's going in there. But I like A&M to take the series, but I think LSU will probably get one. But, we need to pay attention to every bit of this. And, again, we want the teams that we have played to do well, and we want the teams that we've beaten to do well. You know, so you look at, you know, it wouldn't hurt us a bit if LSU won 2 from A&M, right? That'd be a better RPS situation for us. But I'm excited about the weekend. I'm ready to get to Dirty Noble Field, and it does appear the forecast has improved even since we have been recording the show. I've had to pause a couple times and take calls and kind of get some fresh air. But, it does appear that we should be good to go for the game. And I know many of you are kind of keeping an eye on that. And, again, I say that the weather app is one of the worst things that ever happened to society because everybody's become an amateur meteorologist. It's helpful, but I understand we've got real professionals here at Mississippi State. If they felt that we couldn't get the game in, they would move it. Only one time in recent memory do I remember that being an issue, and that was through Bulldog Weekend. A lot of that's just the reluctance to move a game up and then compete with the spring game. I know it was disappointing that we didn't get the baseball game in, but we did win that weekend and swept Auburn. So that's how things look, you know, from a SEC perspective. And I like to get the picks out there, but I think our rooting interest, as always, are teams that we've beaten, and we're rooting against the teams that are ahead of us that we're yet to play. But these Bulldogs, in many respects, kind of control their own destiny. I mean, mathematically, you could still win the SEC, but we're not going to, right? I mean, it's just you're asking an awful lot. You'll be able to go up there and win a series at Arkansas. And not to say that we're not capable of taking that series, especially with their anemic offense, but based on recent events and recent memory of our nightmarish trips to Bomb Stadium, I don't see how anybody can expect us to go up there and win that series. I just don't. I don't see it that way. Maybe you see it differently, but I've learned the hard way, you know, about Arkansas. It's a great atmosphere. It's a great program. Dave Van Horn's a great coach, and we're going to have to bring a really good effort when we get up there. But first and foremost, we got to take care of the Alabama Crimson Tide this weekend. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And when you do, their Facebook page will come up. You can peruse the selections and look at the pictures and get more information. And you can see all the great amenities that are available to you when you book that fine establishment for your event, whether it be a work group coming in midweek, or whether it be a weekend when you're coming to watch the Bulldogs play, or maybe football, baseball, basketball, whatever. Or maybe it's a couples weekend. Maybe it's a guys weekend, a girls weekend. Maybe it's a mixed weekend. I don't know. We don't judge. You do what you want. 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Now, when you Google, there are going to be some booking options that are available to you. Airbnb, VRBO. However, if you book through the Evolve website, we'll give you a 10% discount. Use promo code BSR10. Great, great place to go. My friends used it here about a couple months ago. Had a great time. There's room for everybody to kind of work together in a communal area and then kind of retreat to your own bedroom quarters at night. How cool is that? Full-service kitchen, so you can go to one of our local grocery stores and stock up and cook all weekend. Maybe put steaks on the grill. I don't know your needs. Also, a wet bar. You want to do some adult beverage intake, you can do that as well. It's a fantastic facility. It might be exactly what you're looking for. Yeah. Check it out today, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, let's get into some portal stuff. The spring transfer portal is now officially closed. And again, reminder, that doesn't mean guys had to make a decision. It just means they had to declare that they were going in. So outgoing transfers from Mississippi State, and there have been some. You know, all in all, we had 25 transfers. Now, all those guys are scholarship guys. Some of those guys are walk-ons. But, kind of working through it here. Since the enrollment period, there's still a handful of guys out there that entered back in December that have not declared a decision. And there are a few of those, obviously, that may not, you know. But looking at who has gone in for the spring, Caleb Bryant, of course, announced his intentions to go into the portal prior to spring practice even concluding. Wasn't a good fit. He's moving on. Wish him the best. Keelan Crimmins, our punter from Australia, and we spoke extensively about our punting problems last year. Keelan is now headed to Purdue. Transfers from Mississippi State headed to Purdue. Justin Robinson was a post-spring decision to go in the portal. And, he was a guy, too. Even, in the best of times, it was a question, how would he fit, in this new scheme, trying to run more vertical routes. But J-Rob's a great guy. Wish him the best. Mike Wright, of course, a fan favorite, elected to go in the portal. But also, too, Mike's just not a good fit for this scheme. You know, we brought him in kind of as a second quarterback last year to kind of give us some red zone opportunities. And he did some of those things. Of course, we'll always remember Mike for that fabulous hat and that win at Arkansas last year. One of our few. But wish Mike the best. But probably not going to be a quarterback on the Power 5 level. Zay Alexander from Tupelo. He was a guy who was really high on that high school and disappointed that it didn't work out better. But, kind of the early results, or maybe early evaluations in the spring, was that he was going to have a tough time playing here in this scheme. And so, again, wish him the best. Jaden Hobson is a guy that I really, really liked. Of course, we flipped him from Southern Miss, but his video was ridiculous. But it didn't translate here, so now he has moved on. Khalid Moore is another guy that I liked an awful lot, and I was kind of surprised he didn't get on the field more the last couple of years. He's in the portal, and again, wish him the best. Avery Sledge was a guy that we took late. A guy that down from Forest County AHS High School, a tremendous athlete, and was a quarterback there, and we thought, you know, that'd be able to translate over. That hasn't worked out, though, on the defensive side for us. So he is on the move. May find him at Southern Miss or South Alabama, and that's probably a level that he can play. Wilkie Donat, of course, a guy that transferred in at Mississippi State back in January, back in the portal. So he had some issues at Auburn, comes to Mississippi State, and just lasts the one semester. Now, we've added a couple guys, too, and we're still in the mix here for some others. But, you know, we have, in recent weeks, have added Diego Brumfield, defensive back from Memphis, and then Davin Booth, running back from Utah State. That happened this week. You know, we had Rashad Amos committed for a while, and then he flipped to Colorado. And I don't know that I would want to go to Colorado. It just seems kind of like a toxic environment up there. I'm a big Deion Sanders fan. Got a Deion Sanders autograph on the wall, as a matter of fact, right here in the office when he played for the Atlanta Braves. But it just seems kind of, I don't know, kind of toxic up there at times and maybe not a good situation. But to each their own. And so you say, well, Steve, what does this mean now? Well, as it stands now, we've had 17 incoming transfers, and we're expected to take two more. That's the thing when a lot of people don't keep up. You know, we had a discussion this week on the message boards about a kid that committed a week ago, wanted to know why we didn't have anything on it. We had three stories on it. But sometimes people are kind of casual observers to what's really going on. But you see everybody going out at once, and then they kind of trickle back in. But as it stands right now, Mississippi State has two scholarships to work with. Two. Now, we discussed official visitors earlier this week. We do expect both of those guys to make the trip. Now, what's interesting, too, is earlier today, I got a message from By Job, the Michigan State edge rusher, and we have had a really difficult time identifying a guy that can play at this level in the transfer portal. And he was a guy that was, this morning, there was a lot of chatter that he may cancel his visit and go ahead and commit to Kansas. That did not take place. I kind of tracked that over there at the jeanspage.com message boards. Shared what we knew when we knew it, and by the middle of the morning, we kind of found out that, no, he did not commit to Kansas. Kansas did what they could to try to get him to commit on his visit and not take the trip to Mississippi State. That visit is going to take place now, barring something unforeseen here. I mean, you never know. There's always last-minute changes. However, we're told that Job is going to be here this weekend and that he plans to take the visit and then make a decision sometime next week. It's, you know, it's kind of one of those things, too, when it comes to football portal stuff. You know, if they don't commit on the visit, you typically don't get them. But Jacoby Jackson was a guy that told me when he first got started, I'm going to take all my visits and then decide. And then he visits Mississippi State and doesn't commit, and people kind of panic a little bit because it's not a hard and fast rule, but more times than not, when a guy comes on a visit, they typically commit before they leave. But Jacoby Jackson did commit to Mississippi State following that visit to Texas A&M. And that was big. That was big. So if you don't see a commitment from Job this weekend, it doesn't mean that all is lost. And that's one of the reasons that I kind of share that for what it is, because, you know, a lot of times we kind of get our own narrative and we think, well, this is how things will go or should go. And if they don't go that way, it doesn't mean that things are going to completely fall apart. But that's kind of how the portal breaks down. Again, the portal now officially closed. So anybody now that says, hey, I want to transfer, there's no portal to enter until December. I guess late November. But, yeah, we have to get through the season now. So part of that is understood. Now, among the two spots we got left, we absolutely have to have an edge. We do. And then we got some corners we're looking at as well. And so it's kind of a best available. You got to get an edge, and then if you can find a good cover guy or you can find another playmaker on offense, you take those guys. But again, I think Jeff Lebby and the staff done a great job. A great job. Need to finish. We really need an edge. That's the most glaring weakness I think we have right now. So Job is like priority one. He absolutely is. But, yeah, we do plan to fill those. Now, if it got into a situation, too, we got – there's a couple guys out there too that trying to work their way back and may not, so we'll see what happens. You don't be surprised if you see somebody go on medical at some point, because football is a very physical game. That's to be understood. But right now we have two spots to work with, unless somebody just decides to give up football. And so, but your transfer portal outgoing traffic has ended. And so you don't have to worry about this again for about 7 months. And used to be we'd have to deal with it every day. And putting these transfer portal windows in, probably one of the smartest things they've done since they opened the transfer portal. But we'll spend some time next week talking about this. And, of course, there's, again, a lot of chatter out there about new proposals about making NIL the responsibility of the universities. And so, in many respects, that eliminates fan donations. I mean, I guess you'd still have the ability to donate to the university, and some of that money could trickle down through NIL. This is something that we thought would probably come. It's not here yet, but at least now the serious conversations about that are now taking place. I've seen some numbers upwards of like 21-22% of revenue being allocated for NIL for universities. And so, of course, that puts quite a obligation on the school. And so I think in many respects that probably slows down kind of the arms race when it comes to facilities. And you're probably going to have private donations to get those things done, because you're going to have to pay your players. So it's significant. And I know many of you, of course, have made pledges to the Bulldog Initiative, need to continue to honor those. But we may see some changes on the NIL landscape here in the months ahead. I mean, that's one thing we've learned since they opened Pandora's box, is things are always changing. But we need a national policy that everybody is on board with that enables the schools to be able to do this. And I think with the new TV deal, you can probably figure some of that stuff out. But there's going to be revenue sharing in college athletics, which is something that 5 years ago that just seemed absolutely foreign to all of us. And a lot of people say, well, Steve, it's curtailed some cheating. That's not really the case. I think it's probably helped some, because now you've got a legal vehicle in which to do that kind of thing. If you, instead of you going and putting money in a slush fund and, there's red Nike backpacks dropped off all over the state of Mississippi. But there's still some dark money out there, because there's, people's egos get involved, But I think this, to have institutionalized control over the NIL, I think will probably curtail even more of that. Now, you're going to have these deals too, where they talk about signing contracts, and there's it's not just, hey, give me money. There are things you have to do in order to receive that money, and I think that's a big thing. But college sports is evolving. It is. And I go back to the very beginning of all this, when they first started talking about NIL and then immediate eligibility for transfers. When you paired that together, it kind of created a nightmare situation around the country in multiple sports. Of course, we see it primarily in football and basketball, but I can tell you some of the numbers that I've seen and heard for men's basketball will absolutely curl your toes. I mean, it's absolutely crazy to think about some of the money that's out there. Now, a lot of this money that makes the papers is not accurate. And you can talk to the players themselves, and they'll tell you that that's not true. I wish I was getting that kind of money. But a lot of that, too, people put that stuff out there, I think, because of the fact it's a marketing tool, right? It's a recruiting tool. It's like, hey, well, this school is willing to pay X amount of dollars for this guy, then I need to consider them. And maybe I wasn't considering them before. So I think when all this kind of comes together, you'll have essentially a collective bargaining agreement. I'm sure there'll be some unionization. I know that makes a lot of people unhappy, but it's probably the best course of action at this point. Could have work stoppages and things like that. And that's, we never like that. That's why the adults in the room have got to get this thing taken care of. But anyway, that's my thoughts on it. And again, I'm not going to spend a ton of time talking about that, but it's something you should be aware of, that there appears to be some sanity on the horizon. And you guess you can kind of pick your poison when it comes to that. But, that does not mean that we should stop our fundraising. We still got to tread water until things begin to change. And we've got a big golf tournament coming up here in a few months. I think we're going to do maybe a golf hole sponsorship for that. I think we're considering that. If you hadn't done so, go to TrueRest.com. You can learn more about TrueRest. And if you're looking for a Mother's or Father's Day gift, right now you get BOGOs on the gift cards. And so it's a 2-for-1 deal, so it works out to be $45 a piece. So you can buy one for yourself and one for your mom, or perhaps one for the mother of your children. You know, give mom a day off. Simple as that. Listen, True Rest of Starkville, of course, it's a business that my wife and I own. She runs it primarily, and I go up there and help when I can. And I've been really busy around here as of late, too, as you guys know. You know, working on the dude. And we're kind of in, you know, it's month of May, and that was my goal, to have this book roughed out by the end of May. I guess I got about 7 chapters left, something like that. So we got to rough out about 2 a week. Of course, I've done some extensive research, got a lot of facts together. Now it's just kind of composing the story itself. And then we'll spend the month of June, you know, kind of doing edits and rewrites and things of that nature. And then we'll push this bad boy off to get printed. And so we hope to have it, you know, around September 1st. You know, we like to have it for the first ball game. You know, we may get it in August. And it's interesting. People have already reached out about booking me for events and things like that. And you can do that. If you contact me, I'll direct you to those folks. But I've learned an awful lot. And even my agent is like, this book is so interesting. And he's a Mississippi State guy, too. So he learned a lot. And I can tell you, it's one of the fun things about writing these historical books is because, number one, there's not a lot of information out there about the old days of Mississippi State athletics, and certainly the Duty Noble era. You know, a lot of people know, well, we named a stadium after this guy, but why did we name a stadium after him? And I think after you read this book, you're going to understand completely why we did. And, you know, Duty Noble gave his athletic and professional career to Mississippi State and was a great Bulldog and fought for the Bulldogs in every aspect. And you're going to read a couple of instances that are going to kind of bring a chuckle to your face because of the fact that you're going to read and hear some things that maybe you weren't expecting. But I have been so incredibly fortunate to take this challenge on. And when it first came out, you know, I kind of committed to it before I even had any research done. I said, you know, this is what we'll have to do. And I'm the kind of person, if I tell you I'm going to do something, I have to do it. I'm committed at that point. So the dude will be out here in a few months. And I will tell you, every one of these books are like my babies. I mean, they really are. Because, you know, it's like you turn them out to the wild and then all of a sudden, you know, the world can be a cruel thing, right? And it's been difficult at times to say, okay, I'm done. Okay, I approve that this is the final manuscript. We're done. And then you move on. And then you hold your printed words in your hand for the very first time and you feel exceptionally vulnerable. But this one may be a little more difficult to turn loose of, to be honest with you, because I've had so much fun doing all this research and compiling all this for you guys. And I know the book is good. Let me just go ahead and acknowledge that. That's not me being narcissistic, but I know that the quality of these stories are good. And so I think it's a book that you're going to cherish. And it's a book that every Bulldog is going to want to have, because it really kind of chronicles a time that most people don't know much about. And a lot of this information wasn't available until recent years. So you got to kind of know how to do the research and kind of find these things for yourself. We don't have a date yet for pre-orders, but I will let you know as we get closer to that. Many of you ask me almost daily, when can we pre-order? And so I'll let you know once I know. But this is a book that... again, as some people at Mississippi State told me, this book probably should have been written 50 years ago, but it wasn't, and now here we are, and I'm so blessed to be able to really introduce Duty Noble to generations of Mississippi State fans that really don't know much about him as a man or as a person, and I think that's the aspect of this that's probably the most important. It's not just a book on Mississippi State history, but a man that helped shape Mississippi State athletic history, and you have grown up as a child, or as a student, as a parent, a grandparent, going to Duty Noble Field not knowing much about Duty Noble and why he was worthy of honoring by putting his name on our baseball stadium. And so you're going to learn some things about him. He was a very, very good evaluator of talent, especially coaching talent. He was a great coach, and he was a man that did some amazing things for Mississippi State. And not to be lost in all that, and we'll touch on it later in the book, but his wife Elizabeth, you know, she was a big part of things too. Here at Mississippi State. They never had children. And it's interesting to kind of go back and think about, you know, why aren't there more Nobles connected? But there are some out there, and they're all huge Mississippi State fans that just kind of cheer from afar and they love Mississippi State, and they love everything that's happened, and they love Duty Noble Field. And so I share that with you just because of the fact that I've had a lot of my questions answered, and it's just now just kind of compiling the last little bit. And again, I've been down kind of underneath the weather a little bit, under the weather is the proper term, this week. And so I've tried to rest when I hadn't had to do stuff for Gene's page, but we'll work on the book some this weekend and on in the next week. As I am on the downside of this thing, I probably sound a little raspy, but I do feel better. I don't sound better, but I feel better. You can get all of my sports titles in my latest book at whenthebottomfalls.com. When the Bottom Falls, of course, it really kind of chronicles my life, my path to recovery, and kind of, you know, kind of what it's taken, you know, to stay clean and sober now over 32 years. And even if you're not a person that struggles with substance abuse or you have somebody in your life that does, I think it's a book worthy of your reading. Chapter 19 is one of the things I'm most proud of I've ever written. But you need to read the first 18 chapters to truly appreciate 19. And even Duty Noble's niece had messaged one day and she said, whenever I get down or discouraged, I'm going to go back and read chapter 19. I wanted this book to be a book of encouragement, a book of redemption, and a book about overcoming. And it's one of the joys of my life to be able to share that with you. But yeah, The Dude's a much different book. We're kind of getting back into Mississippi State sports genre, and we got plans for the next one, you know. And I'll need to take a little time off. I always say that, and then I'm always so eager to go again. But I don't know how long all this is going to last. And so I'm just trying to make as, you know, make as big as impact as I possibly can. That's my attitude about it, and I appreciate your support, all of you that have bought books for your friends, your neighbors, or for yourself, whether they be gifts or just, you know, keepsakes and things of that nature. It means a lot to me. And come be a part of our family, jeanspage.com, get on the message boards, get your questions answered, and join in the discussions on the message boards. We certainly appreciate that. We have a great community there. And as always, nobody covers Mississippi State like we do. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I know we're the only media entity that has covered every baseball game for the last 2 weeks. The only one in the country. We've covered every baseball game. Went to Memphis, went to Nashville, went to Pearl, and of course we'll have a lot of company this weekend. But we cover the team even when a team leaves town. And that's and this year we added even road basketball to it too. So we think we do a really good job with it, and we're glad that you do too. So come be a part of that. But let's get out of here today. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.